The question is about limudim.
Why do you need it if the
ikkar
is from the Torah
Shabbat Pen? The ikkar is Torah Shabbat Pen, the ikkar is the ideas.
Right.
Okay, so first of all, there is a phenomenon of Yigumi Midrash Torah Midrash Shabbat, which means that the Torah was written in a way that encoded in the plain, simple story of the Torah, like any plain, simple person could just read and get plain shot. You know, simple, widely read book called the Bible, right? Encoded in that is basically all the depths of Torah Shabbat Pah, right? Through the Midas, through Midas in the, it's a different extra word here, an extra word there. I mean, it is amazing how much you could, how it's like, it's fascinating to see these things, like how the double level in which the book called, we should call the Torah, is written. Is how it has, you know, encoded in it through this very special language of the Yigumi Midos, you know, so many halachas. I mean, you know, much of Torah Shabbat Pah is encoded in some form or other. Not everything, but a lot is encoded in the Torah Shabbat Pah, you know. Now that code is not a code which we really know how to utilize nowadays. Right, we can't be Dorosh Halachos now. We don't have the Masorah or the system, the methodology to which to do it. But it was done, and I think the Rambam holds that's part of the role in Sanhedrin, in Hilchos Malachim. I think that's part of what the Sanhedrin, what they could do, is you could be Dorosh Halachos from, like it was Nitan to be Dorosh, and you could derive Halachos from the Nidos, assuming you know the system. It's not like everything had to be Messina, just like we could derive Halacha from learning a Sugya, they could derive Halacha based upon the Mudim. You know, and it'll be a Doraisa. You know, but that's part of the Sitzel Torah, is Nitan Le Dorish in that matter.
Throughout the generations?
I think when there's a Vasan Ejen or something, yeah. You know. Yeah. I think that's, yeah. It's what he holds, like Kesef is like that. Kesef is the Doraisa Sofrim. I think that's what he holds, the Doraisa Sofrim or something like that. Rabbi Yonah said a share about that. The Doraisa Sofrim is Kesef, and then really he holds, learned that from the Yomido. But it wasn't in the Torah itself. It was like Midrash later, something like that.
Kesef.
What?
Kesef.
Yeah, Kesef. These Kesef recognition.
Oh.
It's the key on the saffron, I think. Also done. So we don't really know the system. We need to do it. Okay, but I mean, I think it is. But that being the case, I don't know if do we still, like, look, it's recorded in the Gemara, and it's like Machlokes and Mar kind of based upon that, and based on he uses the pasuk for this, he uses it for that, and there is a certain consistency, and even though we can't really do it ourselves, but we could see how they do it, and, you know, in terms of trying to understand the Tana or Mishnah, it's kind of, sometimes it's rooted in that. You know, it's rooted in understanding their position is based on how they learned it out, and what the pasuk was, and, you know. And I think that it's, you know, sometimes the limudim point to the svaras, or make it consistent with the svaras, or, you know, like you see when certain halachas are linked together, you know, whether this is a chiddush, it's not a chiddush, but this is just the mevus in the svara, you know, like there is what you could, what? I'll talk to mommy. She's not. She's fine. No, she's there downstairs. I don't know, fine. She's not. It seems to be plugged in now. Yeah, so there's a. So I would think is in some form or other, I mean, this far as should be consistent with it, and it's helpful in terms of learning a sugya to see the limudim. Although I wouldn't, like, you know, necessarily, you know, link the svaras or derive svaras from it, but I mean, I guess it's a matter of taste and a matter of how you learn and how involved the svaras are linked to the pasuk. But I mean, I usually think there's a limud of miyat, somehow it should point to the idea. Even though we don't know the system of how to do it, but it doesn't mean it can't indicate a direction of the idea. Just to take a limud which says, points that it's a din in the chafza of the end, whatever, and then you're just going to ignore that limud and just make it a din in the maisa, or something, I don't know, something like that. You know, I would think you want your limud to be somewhat tied to the limud. You know, the Gemara, which is writing for us how these principles are derived and how the, you know, the basis for their halachas just records what they're, you know, what they're doing.
Right.
What's it going? Yo. You guys could make yourselves comfy on the couch. Is there room, room for that, right? Room for two? No, no one's there.
What about the ones that...
you want another like chair, or you want to sit there?
Yeah, I'm good.
You got it? Yeah.
Like, what about a halakha that we know was definitely from Sina, but yet they still have the motive for it? I mean, maybe that doesn't exist. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure, yeah. I mean, sometimes there are smachtas, you know?
Right.
But it could be anyways. It's just as part of the Chachmas HaTorah that the Torah encoded halachos in the Torah Shavasaf. You know, and you see that's like... What? Yes. And that's what I'm saying. I'm saying two different, two separate things. It could be sometimes it's just not smachta, but maybe times it's really the Oraisa. So it could be that there's something like that. It's like even though it's a Masorah, but it's the Masorah, it shows that it's linked. It is in the Torah. You see, the Torah is like a complete book that it incorporates many, you know, many or all of these halachos in it. Yeah, I know, we talked about that last time, Nach, right? You asked that. Did I address that a little bit last time? And the pasuk is a Nach. I think a Nach is just more of a support for the idea.
Right.
I mean, you have to take each case. It's hard, very hard to discuss these things in a totally removed fashion from any particular example. And in a particular example, I'll just tell you we're not in the sugya right now. So, kind of a hard conversation to have.
What did you say? It's like Gilad Milsa. It's kind
of, yeah, I would think so. Gilad Milsa points to the idea. Yeah, I think so. So, I don't know. It's hard, you know. I guess it would be better. It's hard for me to really answer the question more thoroughly than I am now without particular examples. And, again, particular examples I would think would be through the context of what Gemara share. You know? So, you know.
No examples right now.
What?
No examples.
I don't have any off the top of my head. But I could try to keep it in mind, you know, over the next few months. And when I come across a particular one that I think would be informative, you know, I'll shed light on this discussion. Maybe I could try to remember to tell you about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there are a few at the beginning of Hayakura. Like, it's... Is Shema in every lesson, or is it just in Hebrew?
So that's what particular is that? That's what made you think about this whole thing? Or whatever, just
no,
in general.
I just
yeah, I know about those. Yeah, I know about you, and I know. I know, sometimes they're hard. Sometimes it's hard to do those things. Yeah, I know, that's what I was thinking. You know, gotta be able to do the sugya.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a... Yeah. All right. So, younger fellas, any questions?
We were just talking about Sidibit yesterday about Purim.
Purim.
Yeah, I know it's like last week, but. So
yeah, no, sure. I like
that. Like, there's a lot of things in there that really just don't seem to make sense. Like,
stem.
For one, like, Haman, when he saw Mordecai at that time, like, he was the only person who didn't bow down. Why did he kill him?
Why did he kill him?
Why did he kill him?
Didn't he not?
Why did he not kill him?
Oh, just kill him.
Also, like, just, I don't know. How would he fix it? Yeah, if it was like a, no, that's just like, I don't know, this is a party for 6 months. Like, what? And no, but more than that was, how come no Jew in the whole city, like, opposed to going to the party, every single one of them, right?
Oh. I don't know. How do we know that?
I don't know. I thought it said that.
It doesn't, I don't think it says that. I mean, it says it was the chayt of the Jews that they, you know, enjoyed the Suda Sachveros, but I don't know if it says every single Jew went.
And also, just like, where did Haman come from?
Where did he come from?
Yeah, like, after just came to Kavar from. No, after she came through from.
What's her name? Vashti. Yeah. Haman, seems like. Okay, fine. So, a lot of questions here. Okay, so let's start again. So, what was the first one? You want to kill him. So I think the simple shot I saw, Mordechai was a big shot.
Whoa!
Mordechai was a big shot. Haman was also. Mordechai was, they both are.
Yeah.
Mordechai was the guy in the kingdom. It says Chazal say, I think Chazal say that when it says Haman Achshush made the party, Asos Kirtzon Ish Vayesh, like it means to be in line with the will of Ish Vayesh, each and every man. So I think Chazal say it means who's Ish Vayesh? It means Haman and Mordechai. It's like a reference to like a, you know, sometimes you could throw a party for 1,000 people, or do something for a lot of people, but there's really like a few people in your mind who you're really looking to please.
Yeah.
On a deep level, you know, like on a, you know, like you may dress up a certain way, but there's always, you know, it's not for everybody. There's always like certain special people in your mind, you know. So it's saying is they say it means Haman and Mordechai. Mordechai was the leader of the Jewish people, and he was an advisor. You know, he was an advisor to the king. Because Yoshe B'Shar Malach means that he had a position of power in the kingdom. So he wasn't like the head guy, but you can't just start killing a guy like that. You know, it's true he's Haman, but it's not his kingdom, he's not the king. You saw he was going to make a tree and go into Achshverosh to try to propose it to the king, but I mean, the king's the king. You can't just go and start taking out a guy, especially if he was a loyal servant of the king. He's the guy who saved his life for both the Son of Sarash, right? So, I mean, he's a real guy in the kingdom. So it's not just so simple to just go and kill him.
But like also Ahasuerus, the thing with like he saw the book and like remembered Mordechai.
Yeah.
It just seems so fairy tale, like.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He's like, and also how do they like, they said he was a tippish, but he owned like the world.
Uh-huh.
How does that work out?
Yeah.
He's like, he's such a fool, but like.
Right, that's a good question. Yeah, that's a Chazal. Yeah, that's Machlokes, I think, right? Whether it's Tipesh or Chacham, I think. No? I think it's Machlokes, whether it's Tipesh or Chacham. No, it's true. It's hard to see that you could really be so powerful to be a Tipesh, right? Yeah, I think. I don't know what the Pshat is. What?
Is it that hard to see? Politician?
Yeah, you're born into royalty.
You know, I guess it's true. Well, I don't know if he was born into it. He was a conqueror, right? I think that's how he is. But still. It's true. I mean. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, there are not everyone who runs the world is there's foolish world leaders, or not. You know, I don't know what the machlokas is, or why you say he is or he isn't. But there are guys who are. You see that he was, and this is interesting. What was his deal? Why did he go for this whole Haman deal? Is that he basically, and the Rebbe had a whole pshat about this, but that he basically, this is the Achashverosh Haman connection, is that Achashverosh was not looking for, like the power, like Haman wanted power. He wanted everyone to bow to him and to, you know. He's the man. Achashverosh wanted pleasure. He was Bal Taiva. He was looking for the women and the, you know, the basulos and the partying for 180 days and the drinking and the, you know. And he didn't want to deal with all the running of the kingdom. And that's why he like, look, he gave it to, he gave the kingdom over to Haman basically, and he let Haman make the rules and to, you know, give him the ring and, you know. He was looking, he was like a good shidduch. Is that he wanted pleasure. He didn't want to deal with that, with all that stuff. You know, in fact, there's a Targum who says that the whole rule that, you know, that in order to meet Achashverosh, you have to put down, that he's going to put down the scepter, you got to make an appointment. The Targum says that Haman made that rule. Because Haman basically, they had like an arrangement worked out, that Haman was going to run the kingdom, and Achashverosh was going to do his thing and enjoy himself and whatever. So this way, he couldn't even come and talk to Achashverosh. You know, he had to make an appointment. He wasn't involved in the nitty-gritty of running of the kingdom. You know, that wasn't his thing. He gave that over to Haman. So Haman was looking for the power. And you know, all the he basically set the policies and all that. And Achshverosh was the king, with all the money and all the wealth and all the riches, you know, all that stuff, and the plan, the women, and you know, the problem with the plan. And this is what ultimately this was their play on the whole thing, Mordechai and Esther's play to get Haman, to get Achshverosh against Haman, is that it doesn't seem that that plan is a stable plan. Ultimately, what does Haman need Achshverosh for? You understand why Achashverosh needs Haman? Because he wants him to run the kingdom. Right? But what does Haman need Achashverosh for? I mean, why ultimately won't Haman, when he has the power, one day just kill him? Right? What does he gain from having Achashverosh being the real king? And he's just the second in command. What does he need him for? Right? I mean, if you could just knock him off, and everyone's, you know, Haman builds an army, Haman has supporters, Haman has all these troops who are going to build up to kill the Jews, so he has all these supporters, he's a big, powerful guy, everyone's bowing to him, so why not just knock Achashverosh off one day? What does he lose by doing that? He doesn't really gain anything from having the king. And that was what Esther tried to, you know, get Achashverosh suspicious about Haman through the party, having him go there, what's the deal, why is Haman at my party with my wife? you know, and the whole thing. And she, that's what she said. He's not in this for you. He's in this for himself. He hates the Jews. He's killing the Jews. Even though the Jews could have been a good loyal servants, Mordechai saved his life. Still, Haman has this personal vendetta. He's knocking out these guys. So that was their whole, you know, whole play. And that's what he said. That was like the punchline. You won't even conquer my queen? Because he basically sensed through the plan of Haman, Mordechai, and Esther, that you got him suspicious that Haman's really looking to conquer him. You know, but it seems reasonable to assume that, I mean, maybe he wasn't currently, but it's not in a long-term plan. The second in command at some point will overtake the gang, you know. So that's why it was important. Oh, that's what I think. That's what they're looking in the book that night. You know, that fairy tale point. So I think that was Esther's plan. What's our plan of making these parties? Our plan was to get Ahasuerus to think that something is up, something major. She risked her life. What? Yes, with Haman. She risked her life, something serious, with Haman. Uh-oh, something really important that she's willing to risk her life is going on, and I don't know about it, and I'm in the dark, and he's starting to get nervous, paranoid. A king has to be paranoid if someone's going to knock, you know? Start getting paranoid, so then what does he do? He has to figure out, I got to find out who's loyal, someone got to help me out here. And he starts reading his book to see, maybe someone's upset. Maybe I didn't reward someone appropriately. Maybe there's some sort of a conspiracy going on here, you know? So he pulls out his servant's book. He couldn't sleep, because it's reasonably couldn't sleep. She put this bug in his head, you know? Now he can't sleep. Now he looks at Sarah Zichronos and says, oh yeah, Mordechai, we know the way the king could get protection is by rewarding his loyal servants. Because that's the whole idea. If he rewards loyal servants, then everyone will step up to uncover a conspiracy against the king. So that's what he did right then. He knew, we forgot about Mordechai. It was an oversight. Haman forgot about this whole thing or whatever. And now he went and said, we got to reward Mordechai. You know, he put Haman in his place because he's supposed to be the guy in charge of him, making sure all this stuff happens. So even though it sounds like it's like a coincidence, but it's like a combination of good planning by Esther to basically put this thing in his head, and the hashgacha that it worked out just right. You know, happened exactly. The timing worked out perfectly. Haman walked in right at the right time, and you know, all that. How you doing? Still got some questions, or
yeah,
still got a few?
Yeah.
You answered
it. The way I was told over said by fairy tale, but I guess they said this in the book.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, I'm gonna try to. I'm having a hard time falling asleep.
Right. But that's the thing, you know. Yeah. I mean, if he's a king, you got to realize something like this is going to make you not be able to sleep. You're starting nervous. What's going on?
Paranoid.
You know, paranoid, exactly. And the king has to. I'm saying, a king. Everyone wants to be the king. King's one guy. Everyone wants to be the king. Something really important is going down in this kingdom. This queen is risking his life. Haman, something. What is up? You know, you can imagine the guy's not sleeping that night. And what's he going to do? He's going to pull out the Sefer Zichronos. He's going to pull out the books, the record books, which they keep to see all the different stuff. They'll say, maybe I'm overlooking something. Something's up. What's going on? You know, sure enough. Like, end of the Chazal says, the Malach turned the page or whatever, but it's a simple shot. Some shot is, he opened it up. Mordechai was a guy. After all, Mordechai saved his life against a conspiracy, and he never got anything. That's bad. And that's oversight by Haman. I think that's why he had Haman go parade him through the streets. That's the oversight. Haman should have been, Haman's the guy who's running the kingdom. He should make sure that stuff like that is rewarded.
Did Mordechai want to be rewarded for that?
No, I don't know. Doesn't seem like he was into that kind of thing, you know? Doesn't seem that way. They say he went right after that. He went and put back his sackcloth right after the whole thing, you know? But
there
at the same time.
What? How's he, like, with Esther,
yeah, that's a good question. Well, he was basically, he was Yoshe B'Shem HaMelech. So it means he was like a guy who would be an advisor to the king. One shot says that he was the guy, this is the way I learned based on the Medrash. The Medrash implies that basically he was like the head of the Secret Service. You know, he basically was the guy who was going to make sure Yoshe B'Shem HaMelech protecting the king. You know, looking out for the king, whatever, that kind of thing. The Medrash says, big son of Shash had that position. And Mordechai, Esther said to Haman, to Achshverosh, she says, why don't you do what all the kings used to do? Nebuchadnezzar did this, and apparently it was a minhag. You take a Jewish tzaddik, who is a guy who is an honest guy who you could trust, and he's smart, and you make him your advisor, you know, your guy who sits in the Shamalach, and he takes care of you. So why didn't he do that? So he says, that's a good point. There's Daniel, when Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel was the writing man to Daniel, to Nebuchadnezzar. So she did it, he said it's a good point. She didn't know she was Jewish, but it's just as smart, this is what they used to do, apparently. Because he wants to, the king needs someone we can trust who's going to watch his back. So what he had is, he had Bigson and Sarash, which they're not necessarily trustworthy guys, but you have two guys, so somehow that gives you a certain amount of protection. Maybe one could snitch out the other, or, you know. But she basically said, better to have one guy you could trust. So then he took them out of power, put in Mordechai, and that's why they wanted to poison the king. To show, oh, look at that, see that? You take us out of power, and all of a sudden you get a, you know. So they wanted to put this on Mordechai, who was in charge. He basically found them out. So he was like a big guy. So he had access to the you know, so he was hanging out there in Sharmel. So presumably he was able to talk to, you know, Tahar through the messenger. You know, they say Hasak. Yeah, this messenger Hasak, who they say is Daniel.
They say what?
He's Daniel.
Messenger?
Hasak, yeah. Okay. The messenger. Hasak, it's called Hasak in the Megillah, but Targum says it's Daniel. He was old.
Sure.
But Daniel is still alive. Yeah.
That's funny. Actually, that's funny when they rename people.
Yeah.
They say, oh, that's
it. He was really good. But also, like, you say Mr. Mr. Life.
She was alive, yeah, because the sword, he didn't call her 30 days.
Oh, right.
And she basically just walked in, and she knew that she could get killed. Right? But she did it anyways. So he must have been like, whoa, what's going on here? This is not just an ordinary small thing. She must be that she knows the rule. And yet she's doing it anyways. So that's, you see, it shocked him. So they'll give you half the kingdom. I mean, it was an astounding thing that she did that. You know, that was part of Mordechai's thing, I think, is that you gotta have the grand entrance. You can't just come and make a normal, you know. You gotta make it like a big thing. Yeah. So how are we doing here? What else we got?
Also, like, Ahasuerus wanted to kill the Jews, or he was just chilling with Haman.
Yeah, that's a good question. They say is that, I think there's different things. They say that Rebbe quoted this is that. That he the Kalim of Kalim shown him, you know, that he had all the different Kalim at his party. It says that he had the Kalim of Beis Mikdash, you know. And I think part of his thing was that he wanted Taiva. And the Mikdash in Torah is like a certain restriction on Taiva. Like the special holy Kalim, you can't use them. So he was like trying to have total pleasure, free for all. So like he was against the Jews in that regard. He wasn't like ideologically against the Jews like Haman. Haman was like, he was looking for his own power, and the Jew was like, was a question on like his him being great. They wanted to learn about him, so that was like, you know, we hold by God and no human being, and he held by, you know, himself. But Ahasuerus just, I think, the Jew, like religion, is a restriction on Taiva, so he was against that, you know, so he was okay with it. It says like he was happy, he let Haman go along with it, he gave him making big money, you know, so it seems like he was a good shidduch, but it seems like Haman was really the guy who really hated the Jews, and Ahasuerus was like, in terms of his kingdom, it was, you know. But at the end of the day, he was happy with them because they showed him in terms of his kingdom would be good for him. So he didn't have like an underlying hatred, he just wanted that which was going to be good for his money and his power.
So
how can
he hire Mordechai, though,
let him say, what, at the end or at the beginning? Oh, so at the beginning is that. I think that the thing is that when you hate the Jews, you realize that the Jews are and he's productive and he's mortified and he's like, you know, you got there's like that balance, you know, to have an advisor who's really like a tzaddik, a perfected guy, you could tell his secrets and you could tell his, and you need someone you could trust, so you know he's someone you could trust. The Jews are good, loyal servants of the king, and you see, he saved the king's life, and you know, so. You know, he had a certain type of an animosity against a Jew, but at the same time, he was, you know, he had appreciation of who Mordechai was. He was a great person. You know?
Are you just thinking about that in
the mounds?
Yeah.
Where is it? No. It said, like, Haman and Ahasuerus are, like, two guys, one with, like, a big mound of dirt on his heel, and then with a big hole, and they're both willing to pay money to get rid of
right.
the problem. They met
each
other.
Right.
I said, oh, I got a hole,
I
got
right. a hole. Right. 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 So what he says, because of the play, what he say, what?
Yeah,
so
like, yeah.
I think it's right, he said it years ago.
Wait, they were polytheistic?
Polytheistic?
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like they're very religious. But so presumably. Yeah, that's a good question. What was their religion at the time? I don't know. But they didn't, right? I mean, It doesn't. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure there's a some sort of other, you know. But it doesn't seem like religion is a big part of their lives. You know, they say Helman put a statue around his neck. But
a what?
They say Helman put like a statue around his neck or something like that.
So they worship idols.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, like everyone does. But it's not like it doesn't seem like it was a major force of like idolatry. Or something, you know, seems to be maybe they did. You know. They're more into themselves and their pleasures.
So, according to this scheme, so what's the dialogue when Esther reveals at the second party to Ahasuerus? She says, like, oh, someone's trying to, like, kill my people.
Right.
Haman, like, doesn't sound exactly like...
Well, I think one of the things she says, someone's trying to kill my people, and the Elu, if they would have sold us as servants, then that would be fine, because we don't want to harm the king. Right, so she was trying to say, listen, Haman's telling you that this is good for the kingdom, right? But let me ask you a question, why not just make the Jews slaves? Wouldn't that be better for the kingdom? Why are you killing productive people? They could be servants, they could work for the king. So you see that he's just totally, he just hates, you know, he hates the Jews. That's what's going on. He's power hungry and he doesn't have an honesty for the thing, but he's really hurting the kingdom. So you see, she's trying to like subtly say, he's an evil person. He's not interested in the kingdom, in the king's, you know, in the kingdom. And he's just taking out his own personal vendetta into the, you know, in a way which is negative for the best interests of the kingdom.
Right. Yeah. I don't really understand how he's.
What?
I don't really understand how Ahasuerus didn't know, like, Esther's backstory. Like, who she was, or people, like, she got mad at this person, didn't know the backstory, or where she's from.
She's really pretty. Really pretty.
Your eyes, bro.
Yeah,
like she was quiet. She wouldn't talk. She played that card, you know. She played the quiet card. And he couldn't get it out of her. He wasn't gonna kill her. Apparently he really is attracted to her. And she was
like,
oh, you know what they say? They say like this, is that they say, why wouldn't any of the Jews tell, right? Why wouldn't the Jews tell, right?
Yes.
So I forget if someone said this or I don't know, somehow I had this idea, but maybe someone must have said it. But that everyone was saying, she's not saying who she is, right? Now, everyone wants to be the one who the queen is from, right? So every group of people is saying, oh yeah, she's from us, she's from us, you know? Like, you don't believe people who claim that, it's from, you know? Yeah, that's my sister, give me the power, you know? So it does not going to work, you know?
Well, they could be saying, different shot, they're all saying, oh yeah, she's a Jew, just because... They know Ahasuerus doesn't like her, so he won't pick her.
Oh, yeah. Some say it says she's a Tsunua, you know? So it's hard to believe that no one even knew who she was. Not one Jew ever saw her face. You know? I mean, I don't know. It's hard to know what things were like back then. You know, but somehow, you know, it doesn't seem that reasonable. But it seems like it's a good shot. It's hard to, you know, you can't... He's not just going to believe rumor gossip that she's from. All she's saying she's not telling who she's from, so that's it. As the king, you know, unless the king would torture her, but he's not doing that. So now look, apparently she was no such thing being a Kalaroya, so apparently she had a manner about her. Presumably the Hashkacha helped out here, but there is such a thing as a person who's just, you know, you don't know the backstory, you know who she is. She's a good person, she's pretty, she's you know, and whatever it is. I mean, that's something Hashkacha that she
why? Ended up being. What was the exchange when she went into the place and he had the scepter, he was going to kill the person if the person didn't know?
What was what?
If I questioned the king, he killed me. What was the exchange like? What she said?
Oh, when she walked in?
Yeah.
Let's go to our party. Let's make a party. Come to my party tomorrow.
So how was that question?
Well, no, you can't walk in. The rule was, if you walk into the king's thing without an appointment, 30 days, they're going to kill you. So, the rule is you get killed unless the king puts down his thing, you know? So she risked her life. She went in there anyways, in order to make him realize this is like a serious, serious thing. It's not just a standard thing where you make an appointment. So she risked her life, and he says, whoa, what's going on? What do you want? I'll give you anything, up to half the kingdom, you know? And she basically said, okay, I want to have a party with you and Haman, and I'll tell you what I want there.
Why couldn't she just be like, if he was that serious about it, if half the kingdom could just say, I'm trying to kill my people, Jews?
It seems like she knew that Haman and Ahasuerus had were tight, and if she just said that, it was too risky. Like she's with Haman on the plan. He owns his right hand man. It's true he's saying that, but she's not necessarily going to go against Haman. She had to first create the rift and the jealousy and the suspect and the whole you know, and it played out. She knew that she had to first, like, lay the baby, you know, get him wondering, get him start the splits before she makes a plan.
Was it Mordecai's plan or her plan?
I don't know. Someone asked me that. I don't know. Someone else asked me that. It's not clear. I mean, it doesn't say it was Mordecai's plan.
It's a good plan.
It's a good plan, right? I don't know. It's serious. I mean, this is part of the thing why the Jews were all, like, they were moved by the Torah. It's like all the Jews accepted the Torah out of Abba after these events, and many people even converted. It was like the events of the Megillah are like a good model in the downfall of the Rasha, the mistakes of like Ahasuerus and Haman, and the perfection of Haman and Mordechai, and after using their perfect plan and their Chachma and Hashgacha, working it all out, all the details of the thing to fit into place. Because, you know, even the best plan doesn't have to work. You know, there's a lot of factors have to work, you know, fit into place. So it's like, it's like a model of the life of the tzaddik versus the life of the rasha, and the hashgacha working with the proper disciplines of the tzaddik, you know, making them successful, and the mistakes of the rasha and their downfall. You know.
Also, like, why not have Yosef buy Jews as part? You like Jews?
Well, he was the man of all people. See, let's listen. He wanted Yosef on the show. He wanted to please everybody. He wanted everybody to love him.
Oh,
he's a popular king, everyone loves him, he gives everybody wine, fancy wines,
yeah,
fancy stuff. He wanted, he didn't want to have this divisiveness, you know, Jews and this, and he wanted assimilation. That was, I think, that was his plan. That's what I think was the chet of the Jews, that they went and they went to this party. He wanted to basically make himself the king of the people. One nation, one people, we're all together on this, you know, it's a big party. He invited him, you know, party for the regular people, the party for the officers, you know. That was his plan. He wanted to break down those borders. He wanted to assimilate the Jews. That was his point. He wanted to basically get rid of all these distinctions, class distinctions, and it was just all a party. You know?
Why did the Jews deserve to get saved if they did that?
That's a good question. So why did they? What do you think?
It is true after, but that was like...
It would seem that was the thing. She basically, she did, she called a fast. And then they all did tshuva. So, I mean, fast is always tshuva. So it seems like that was the plan. She made a plan, and she's fasted for 3 days.
That
she had all the other people.
Yeah.
I think they, I don't know. It's a good question. I wanted to learn. Huh? Yeah, well, it says Laila V'yom. But based on the Tirgum, I think it means is that they ate, this is what I wanted to say. Because I know, I thought the same thing. It means they ate at night, but see, the key, the real key of the Tainus is the tshuva. So I think it means that Laila V'yom was 3 days of tshuva. But the eating part of the tainus was only during the daytime. But it was like a unit of 3 consecutive days of the kiyum of tainus, which is the mindset of tainus, and the tshuva of tainus was like a contiguous thing. You know, so yeah, technically they had a night because they have to, you know, eat and die, you know, something like that. You know, but I think it's based on the Tirgum that I blind myself to that idea. It was like 3 days. The 3 days Laila V'yom was in the lathe of the tainus, the internal tshuva of the tainus, but the actual fasting was only during the day. You know? But it seems like they made a massive changeover in their whole mindset of the people. It's, you know, it's quick, 3 days, and they were spalal, I'm sure, and, you know, they looked into their chataim, and they realized, and then it seems that was it. And then she had the plan, and their leader, you know, had the great plans, and were at a high level, and it seemed like it worked out. It says, it was interesting, it says that the reason why, the question is why they deserve to have the thing happen to them, altogether, right? So it says, as Rashi says, it's for 2 reasons. Did I tell someone this? I just told you the question, right? Matt, were you there?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I told you the question, I don't think I said it, right? So it's 2 things, because they bow down to the idol in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, which was like 767 years before. And because they had Hanah from Sidus Ahasuerus, they joined in Sidus Ahasuerus. Those, that combination. So the question is, what's the combination? What's the combo plan? The 2 things somehow led to the sealing of their fate. Right? Bowing to the idol and having Sidus Ahasuerus. So that's my question for you. What's the combo? You know, you and your buddies. No, that's it. Fellas.
Think about it.
Okay.
Good method. feel like it was like a mass thing, like with a lot of people and whatnot.
You made the Suda. Okay, good. So what's that with the combination? What's the combo? You know what I mean? Like, I understand how each, the bowing down to an idol is bad. Bad, you know? And then it's still Sashvero, shares all the people, assimilating, something like that, you know? But, like, it seems to be that, or at least Rashi's holding, that it's the two of them combined that really is... It says Mordechai understood what, knew what happened. It says, it's interesting, the way the Megillah says it, it's like, it says they sent out letters, and then it says Mordechai Yadai Sashar Nasa. So Mordechai knew what happened. So the question is, of course he knew what happened. Everyone knew his bladder was running. So it says, no, he knew that min hashamayim, this was a jardin because of these things. So he understood it. Aliza? Aliza? Nava, just call, okay?
Why did you make it that far?
Yeah, on your cell phone.
Oh my God.
I'm not bouncing when I want to say this.
Party had us that can be taken in a certain context.
Okay.
Like, they went to the party and it was just like, okay, we're just going because the king invited us. We're going to be disrespectful to the king.
Right.
And they go, but maybe the idols then kind of shed light on what their whole motive was for that, and like kind of just showing their. Like their path and how they're taking this new kingdom that they're under, and those together
But it's not like it was an Avodah Zarah party.
And wasn't the idols
right?
Before?
That's
yeah, the idols was before. Time. Yeah, many years before.
No.
It's not like that.
That type of thing is like kind of Avodah Zarah. It's like there's no hope for that. So many people going at one time, just doing all these things that are trending against the Torah. It might not be like Avodah Zarah.
Okay. Good. Good, but then what do you need those are also? So then just say, just because of that. It just says because of Tuchatan. Because they bowed to the idol in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, and because of this.
Maybe it's like, they did the Avodah Zarah part, and they did, like, the assimilated with the God.
Right.
Right. And, like, I don't know, maybe that's
like
another part of Avodah Zarah.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah, good. Good, you just gotta weave it together a little better, but...
It sounds like a two-stepper.
Two-stepper.
Like for a complete Gezeirat Din of destruction, you need like a complete breakdown of their whole system.
Okay.
First they had the intellectual breakdown, which was the Avodah Zarah.
Right.
And they just like descended into Taiva, which was the party.
But you mean the philosophical Zarah thing? National Grid for meter reading. They work around the clock, these guys.
Hey, wow, they're coming down like a wild app.
From the work?
Yeah. Yeah, okay, I hear what he's saying, Shrew. So, that's what I was thinking. Okay, it's similar to what you're saying, but I don't know if you can compare. But I was thinking is that. See, Avodah Zarah is the worst. Right? It's the worst thing. Totally against Torah. But, it's like a one-time chet. Like, it was a time of Nebuchadnezzar, he was pressuring them, and they bowed to Avodah Zarah. You know? Fine. They did that. But that's, look, so they get the tshuva, you know, even the terrible chet, they get the tshuva from. But, then what happened was, then they became like assimilated. They became part of the culture of the times. And then basically they're not coming back. Whereas the culture is ultimately the Avodah Zarah, right? Whereas there is an undercurrent of Avodah Zarah in the whole culture. It's a culture of Avodah Zarah. But so like it's like when they did Avodah Zarah, but then they become part of the culture. So it's no longer just an isolated action. But now they're becoming versions. They're becoming part of the whole kingdom. So now that's where the kingdom is. That's the kingdom which is ultimately rooted in Avodah Zarah. So it could be as a combination. If they only had the party, so you'll say fine, they're assimilating in terms of taiva. But at least they know where to draw the line. They wouldn't do Avodah Zarah. So their taiva is one thing, it's bad, but at least still the essence of what a Jew is, they got that. They wouldn't do Avodah Zarah. But they did do Avodah Zarah. So it's like, so they do Avodah Zarah, and they're becoming part of the culture. So then they basically, that's where they're becoming. They're becoming idolaters. You know, so it's like, you need the combination. The combination of the fact that it's idolatry, but the idolatry isn't just an isolated thing, but it's that they're melting into the culture, the society, they're becoming Persians, whose ultimate, you know, society is built around the Avodah Zarah, and they are willing to do Avodah Zarah. So they're not removed from Avodah Zarah, so they're becoming part of that culture. You know? So it would be almost like as if, like, Jews nowadays become Americanized. You know, assimilated into America. But we're not going to start bowing to the cross. You know? So, like, you could say we partake of all the titles of America. But you'd say, yeah, but there's a line. Jews aren't doing that. They're not becoming Christians. You know, they don't believe in Jesus. They're not, you know, that's something, that there's a point that would be on the Jews don't do that. And it's probably true, Jews don't. You know? I don't know. Whatever. It's a question. I don't think they do. You know, so it's like that's that. At least there's like a limit, you know. But once they bow down to the idols in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, and apparently they never, you know, did chew on that. They never really they broke away from that. So then basically they don't have their limits. So that's where there's no, you know, there's no border up. We won't go there, you know. But you could argue the Jews today have that boundary up. As much as Americanized the Jews become, We're not becoming Christians, you know. We're not bowing down to, you know, to the cross. So you could argue that's like a limit into the rishus, into the thing. But Mordechai understood the Gezeirat Din. He understood why basically the chayav to be destroyed. Why that was the din. And that's why he was really mourning, because he saw that this is that the Jews are gone. Okay.
So what was the part?
The party was trying to make them totally assimilated, which that was what Mordechai Shoshana was trying to do, and they fell into it. I mean, he basically waved all the taiva in front of them, you know, and they fell for it.
It's like a constant Avodah Zarah.
Well, it's not. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's an Avodah Zarah party.
Right.
The party was just making everybody part of the culture of the Persian culture.
That's a bad thing too, though.
What? It's terrible. Yeah, it's bad, but. Since the Persian culture is ultimately a culture which is built around the Avodah Zarah, and the Jews are becoming part of that culture, and they don't have a limit beyond which they're not going to cross, because you see they bowed down to an idol 50 years ago. So now they're basically becoming, what differentiates the Jew from anyone else? Right, the Jew is basically a Persian. What's the difference? So you could have at least said, well, it's true the Jew is a Persian in terms of title, but he doesn't do Avodah Zarah. That would have been one thing. Then fine. Bad, terrible. But at least they wouldn't have been chayav to be destroyed. But now, the combination of those two, Rashi's learning, that's what made them chayav to be destroyed. You know? He's basically a Persian, and he's not distant, at least in terms of, even in terms of idolatry. It's similar to what you're saying, Shmuel. I mean, I'm saying it from a different angle, but... Yeah.
I don't understand what exactly the problem with the party was. Like, was there a big sign, like, oh, we're assuming, like, I don't get, they just got a party, I don't understand how that's...
Well, they say, it's a Kalim Beis HaMikdash. But I think the idea is that he was trying to do is to set up that we're all one culture. That was his thing. He was trying to cater to everybody, show them the wealth, show them the fun, show them the good time. We're basically all together. Like, there's an instance, for instance, you don't drink wine with Ganyam. Because it's like chasmas, it will lead to something, you know. So there's an idea of like an identification. It breaks down there has to be a distinction. A Jew has to know he's not a guy. And we're distinct, and we're not part of their culture. So there has to be a person has to always remain distinct. So Mordechai Achshverosh was setting up the nature of the party was to basically declare and to unify us all as being part of this big, you know, taiva party.
Like, even to the point of not
drinking
with them, that's just...
Yeah, I mean, you see, you're not allowed to drink wine with the guy, right? There's a thing of, for drinking, I think, drinking their wine, or if they touch the wine, then, right? Because there's an idea of chasmas. Yeah. Because of chasmas. So you see, there's a point in certain things. All those things, Bishlak, Umstami, and, you know, drinking beer with them in their place. What? There's also mechasmas. I think, yeah, there's two things. Stamienu, I think, is because of chasmas, if they own it. Even without a chashash that they poured it. If they own it, I think it's chasmas, their wine. Even if they don't, even if it's sealed, I think it's their wine.
Oh, really?
I think so. It's theirs. I'm not sure. But there's definitely two things. I have to go work the sigya, but there's definitely a combination of yain esach and chasmas. It's a chashash of intermarriage. But intermarriage is a big thing, and the way intermarriage happens is through these types of things. So, through partying together, eating together. I mean, there has to be a gvul. And Achashverosh, so I'm saying that was Achashverosh's party. He was, Lassos Kerson Ishvash, he was trying to cater to every single person, make them happy, make them feel comfortable, make them feel like they're all one big Persian group. You know? And the Jew has to know that he's distinct.
What's that goal? Meaning, how far is that distinction?
You know, halachos.
But I mean, like, I guess I'm asking because, like, looking nowadays, it kind of gets blurred and meshed a little bit. Because, like, you'll have one extreme of, like, doing everything that the guy is doing, and then you have the other extreme of, like, not even, like, wearing, you know, certain things.
Right. Look, I think we have halachos. I mean, halachos keep the stuff. Presumably they're wearing halachos. And, you know, I think so. I mean, there's, look, I don't know, every case, you have to judge a case on a case basis. I mean, I'd say the basic guideline, I would think, is halacha. If you know that there's a particular move to Americanize the Jew and to knock off the whole identity of the Jewish people, then I would think you have to resist it.
Like that was
that's
the vibe?
Particular, yeah, that's the vibe of what the party is. That's what he says, he's taking the Kelim Beis Mikdash, showing there's nothing, no Kseshen's Kedusha, and it's like the whole nature of the, I mean, you could study the nature of his party, all the particular details of it, but I think he was trying to basically total, hefker, free, taiva, no rules, no limits, no superego, just total breakdown of everything, you know? Everyone could drink how they want, there are no rules, there's a total, you know? So I think there was like a certain like ideology that he was conveying, almost like a Ben Sonora type, a Zola Vasilve type of an ideology in the party. So even if like you could technically avoid halachic yisurim, but it's like an Obishal's Torah type of thing, you know? The whole nature of the party is like an orgy. Presumably there are lots of women at the party. You know, you see who's asking Vashti, Chazal says to come out naked in the party, you know? Presumably there are lots of women. It doesn't say openly that they were having, you know? But presumably that was this big taiva party and everyone's drinking for all these days. You know, you can imagine there's a lot of sex going on and women and whatever. You know, I don't know if it says that, but, you know, why not? You know. It's just the taiva fest, you know?
Is it the shot that he took the kelim to the Beis Hamikdash? Because I know we read that in, like,
Shechatim. Maybe that's why?
It seems like that's almost the shot.
I don't know. Good question. Is that the Tirgum?
Check. Let's see. Maybe the Tirgum says that.
It's funny that we, like, read those things
so
and
we,
like,
came
with
them. Sam, how do you say, like, a horde, like, on a horde of, like, animal?
Karen?
Karen.
Gotcha.
Karen.
Let's see here.
Like Karen?
Karen. I'm not
Karen.
Okay.
Karen.
Really?
What? It's a random thing you
know.
What are you talking about?
Really?
Did you
didn't like
yeah.
it last week or something?
Yeah, I mean, it says, the Tirgum says it. It says it's going to be some English.
Right. Yeah. Where does that come from? Is that from the...
I don't know, I never even knew about that. I never realized that.
What day is that
then? Yeah, I never noticed that. Yeah. So I can't remember how much I didn't know about it. Unless you, where does it come from?
No, it strikes me.
Yeah.
A couple psukim we did.
Yeah? Where else?
Where the Mordechai rips his shirt.
Yeah.
I guess I'll ask Estelle.
Yeah, you can ask Estelle. I'm not that musical, so I don't pick up on these types of subtle, you know.
And they sound really, really similar to those two changes. It's funny how, like, one's happy, one's sad. Right. They sound like you don't realize when they switch.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to like this album?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So, this is a swerve, but what does the Yeshiva think of Ruach HaKodesh? Because it seems like a very, like...
Ruach HaKodesh?
Yeah, I know the holy thing, but like...
I think the Rambam holds is the lowest level of Nevuah. And what he holds it, I think the way he says, is that it means like a... It's like the highest level, like in terms of the lowest level of Nevuah, or the highest level of thought. Where there's like an assistance in like thought.
Epiphany.
I don't know if it's like I'm not sure if it's like a moment of inspiration. I think there was. I don't know if I've ever seen this, but I think I heard a quote. The Rambam says he wrote the Ron Ruch Nitzroch Kodesh. That it's. I think the idea is there's a certain like the ability of a person to gain insight is based upon his ability to focus in a certain type of a way and to hook into true ideas. And there's like when a person does that to the highest possible, highest level, where there's like a hashkacha that assists him in being able to really gain insight. I think that's like that's the Rambam calls Ruach Kodesh. It's not like a nevuah where it's like where he's like gaining some sort of body of knowledge or some mashal which he gets in a dream. But I think it's like it's human thinking, but it's like an assisted human thinking. You know, whereas he's like having like a hashkacha, which is enabling him to gain, you know, a certain level or a certain breadth, a certain mastery of an area that he wouldn't otherwise be able to get without a hashkacha.
It's not literally like he just like
throws
the future.
No. I mean, that's Nevuah, and Navi is like that. I mean, you're asking about Nevuah, and Ruach Kodesh posted Nevuah, or Nevuah is also in the
future? It's like Nevuah also is like.
Yeah, Nevuah knows the future, yeah, Navi does know the future.
Straight up.
I don't know if he knows every single thing, but he knows certain things about the future, he knows, yeah. Yeah. Certain things. That's how he tests the Navi. He has to do predictions. And to the point where it's clear that it's beyond the, you know, beyond the reason that he guessed or something like that. Yeah, he hooks into God gives knowledge to man. You know, that's the idea of the Buddha. The Torah is through God giving knowledge to man. Yeah.
In fact, there's like some things that she was very good. Washing with tail or something, like, it's not literal.
Yeah, right, I
see.
Yeah, right.
I was curious.
Yeah, no, Nevuah is real. Nevuah is a real deal. It's true. The whole Torah, we don't have the Torah without Nevuah. What's the Torah? The Torah is a book that God gave to Moshe through Nevuah. Right? Yeah, so Nevuah is for sure. I mean, I think we're, I don't think we're into, though, like, I think a lot of people like to throw around the term. This guy got Ruach Rabbi, got Ruach Kodesh, this guy got Ruach Kodesh. You know, it's like not like a common thing, and it's not something which is like, you know, every rabbi and his, you know, and his children get Ruach Kodesh on a really good basis. I think we're not into that. But the fact there's a phenomenon like that in Nevi'im, the fact that, I mean, look, there's, how many Nevi'im were there? The Gemara has 67 or something. There's a list in Megillah. About something like that, less than 100, I think. Seven Nevi'ah, seven girls, and maybe 47 men and seven women, something like that. It's a small amount of people in Nevi'ah. And then Ruach Kodesh, I think the Ram holds is a lower level. I think the Ram holds Dabar Malach was in a Navi, but you're Ruach Kodesh.
B'nai Nevi'ah,
I think, means they're aspiring to be Nevi'ah. So there's like a certain, you know, Nevi'ah, I think the Ram holds a Navi is, or a Navi is like the height a Chacham could reach is where he gains Nevi'ah. It's not like a separate thing, like he's a magical guy. Nevuah is the greatest chacham, could rise in his level of chachma, and you could reach the level of Nevuah. So it's not like, what?
That's how he expresses it in like Yisod and
Mishnah Torah. It's chachma. Yeah, right. Right, so B'nai Nevi'im doesn't mean like if you're a B'nai Nevi'im and you're aspiring to get Nevuah and you never make it there, he says, oh, I wasted all that time in Navi school and I never got anywhere. It's he's learning chachma, so he's ascending the heights of chachma and trying to reach the point of where he's going to be able to get Nevuah. I guess that's the height of not of you know. Although it could be that those the list of Nevi'im are those Nevi'im. There's Navi like a personal Nevuah, and then there's a Nevuah like for the sake of Chai Yisrael. Like he sent that on a mission. It could be that list is a list of public Nevi'im. Doesn't mean there are more people who are like go on the private level. I'm not sure. Yeah. Okay. good on the Megillah questions? We got them all? Pretty much.
Yeah, I mean.
It's a cool book. It's really, you know, it's worth studying or, you know, asking these questions because it's amazing, an amazing book. It's not like nothing, like almost like nothing else. The whole story, the whole different components of the. You know, Chazal say that in the Lasid Lava, the Ram has this, in the future, Lasid Lava, the Master Mashiach, says all the books of the Nevi'im are going to be, so to speak, outdated. We're not going to really, we're just going to have the Torah and Megillah Zastar. So that's. I think Rabbi Adib Shah that he wanted to say is that Megillah's Esther is like the model of, like the Torah is like the life of the Jews, and the Torah is like a miraculous kind of life. Right? Everything God's involved in a miraculous fashion throughout the Torah. You know, they're the hand of God, they're bringing the Mon, and they're the Yom Suf, and the Makos, and you know. Like the Megillah is a model of the life of a Jew. Not with like open miraculous hashgacha bodies, you know. Like insofar as the life of Jews in tzara, in you know, in doing tshuva, in using their chachma, in working with the forces of nature, hashgacha helping them insofar as they're doing that, the downfall of a rishayim who are making bad decisions and living that life. So it's like a model of the life of Torah is. And how it succeeds and the life of Rishos fails. You know? You know? So that's like, it has that unique, like, alongside of Torah, it serves that function, you know?
So what about
Nevi'im? So I think Nevi'im, every, there are a lot of books, but like Nevi'im, not Ksuvim, Nevi'im are like.
Ksuvim stays.
No, Tuvim goes also, but I'm just answering the part. Nevi'im is that the Jews are Chotim, and the Nevi'im were sent as like a Mazi, you know, as a Gifim. Like, I think the idea is that the other ideas could be included in the Torah itself. Like, Megillah serves a particular function which isn't in the Torah itself. It's like a model of that type of a life, you know? But you could argue, it's like the particular role of a Navi is insofar as the Jews are straying, and the Navi comes and gives them a Musa or something. So maybe the Muslim Mashiach, you don't need that.
What
is
that?
Well, that's what the Ravid says. It doesn't mean they're not going to be. I think the Ram holds it like Enigmas or something, you know. But I think the Ravid says it just means they're not going to read it in them in Barabbas. But he says every sefer has limud, like what, you know.
Yeah,
why should they go? Yeah, we're going to get rid of them. That's the Ravid's argument.
What are you going to do with all the Asmathas in the
I know, it's a funny Rambam. You know, I'm just kind of bringing it up to show that they held Megillah as unique.
Right.
You know, something special. But yeah, I mean. It's interesting. Man, my house is so busy.
It's crazy.
What was that?
Okay, no more talking about this guy.
Oh, here, no, last guy in, just sits on the ottoman. You want a regular chair? Are you good, though?
No, I'm good.
I don't get that number of questions. I get this number of questions.
Okay, so you got your question? You bring a question?
What's the deal with YBT?
Mainstream.
Mainstream.
I know what you're talking about.
So also what happened with did Esther stay with Ahasuerus after this story?
Yes.
Is that okay?
That's an interesting
thing. She had a choice.
The story ends and she's trapped. That's like a happy ending.
I know, it's true. No, I mean, she was really... I mean, I know you don't think of that, but it's a sad story insofar as her.
I think that's what it was.
I mean, especially a simple pshat is, I mean, there's machlokes in Chazal, but they say she was married to, a lot of Chazal say she was married to Mordechai. Yeah. And it says that the whole time she was taken against her will. So it says
weren't
against her will. What?
Yeah, it goes against pshat.
What?
Weren't they related?
They were somehow related.
It's it
was it? I think it's, I think it says he was her... Yeah, but I think your uncle is... I think you're allowed to marry your niece. You're allowed to marry your niece.
No, but it talks to him as a father figure.
No. I don't think so. No, your uncle, your brothers... I think they say it's a mitzvah to marry your uncle's daughter or something. Your brother's daughter or something like that.
Maybe like to marry your aunt's is not good?
Some, yeah, I think so. That's how it goes. There's one of them which is you think would be a rias, but it isn't. I just saw... Why did I just see that? Oh, yeah. I just this morning, this tonight with Ezra, I think it's in Shoftim. I know in Yeshua or Shoftim. No, in Shoftim. Kolev says, whoever kills someone, will I'll give my daughter to. And Kolev's brother kills him. So he gave Asniel Mekanaz, I think. I think so it was. And he gave him to his daughter. That's what I was asking. He says, aren't they related or cousins? I think that's the thing. I think Chazal say it's a mitzvah to marry her. Because there's a certain kirov, like that you have. You have to take care of her, protect her, something like that. Yeah, but the point is, so Yaakov, so I think the thing is that they said that originally she was taken against her will. So the thing is like this, is that if a woman is married, so if she's, let's say, raped, if a woman has an affair when she's married, then she, willingly, then she becomes also her husband. Okay, that's halacha. She sleeps with another man willfully, but if she's raped, she doesn't. So I think they say that until, according to those who say that she was married to Mordechai, so they say, Achashverosh took her against her will. She didn't have a choice. She took all the Vesulas, you know? So then she didn't become Asur Mordechai because she was because it was against her will. But they say, V'chasher avadati avadati, when she went before him to the thing, she said, "In like I'm lost, just like I was lost, I'm lost." Which simple shot means she's giving up her life. Like she's risking her life by going in with this, you know? But Chazal say it means that now I'm lost, I'm going to become Asur to you. Because, see, they don't tell you this part, but the simple pshat is when she was going to Ahasuerus, she was going to seduce him, and they were going to sleep together. Like, she was presenting herself before the king, and, you know, that was like, she's the queen going before the king, and he's saying, "I'll give you anything you want." That's like what's going on. There's a sexual, you know, she's submitting herself to him sexually. Yeah, he missed that, I know. But when you think about it, you realize, like, of course, I just heard the story when you were a kid, so you don't think of that.
Right.
You know, but that's... So that's what I think it says. Then it says, until this point, she was only slept with him when he forced her. Or he brought it on, he demanded it. But now she's going before him, so now she became Asur to Mordechai, forever. So Mordechai is her husband, and she's now becoming Asur to him forever. But she took that hit for Klal Yisrael, for the sake of whatever, and then for her whole life, now she's married to Mordechai Ahasuerus, living with the king. This guyish king who's not, you know, no Mordechai. But that's, you know.
They have kids.
What?
They have kids.
They say there's some rumors in history. I don't know, like some king Darius, someone was like Esther's kid, or there's things like that. I don't know. I'm not a historian, but I think there are people who say I've heard people talking about how certain of these kings were really Esther's kid. You know, but I don't know.
She was allowed to make that life decision for the sake of Jews.
Yeah, apparently.
Like, isn't this
Arias? Apparently. What about Yael also? Yael is just the Rakani, right? She slept with Sisera. Kill him? That's Avera Lashma. Apparently they have for the sake
problem?
Of...
What's the she was married or that this guy's not
guy?
Jewish?
Both. Well, it's a question. There's a machlokas whether you say this whole thing. There's another machlokas is whether the guy counts. Whether the answer is when she... Whether it's an Isser Isser with the guy or not. Or it's just that you're not allowed to sleep with the guy. It's a different problem. But the question is, do you violate the Isser if I'm being like adultery? With a guy. So, simple pshat is, it's a machlokas. You know, so, but either way, if she's married, that's a bigger problem. But the fact that it's a guy also. You know,
right.
Both problems.
Wow.
That's, the Gemara asks that. Says, how'd she do it? How'd she go in the first place? They say that she was passive. She's Esther Karkolam. She was passive. She just let him act. And, you know, she was passive in that. And, yeah.
that's considered what there?
Yeah.
Well, that's considered an honest then?
Well, it's like an honest. Yeah, she's basically forced, and she didn't do anything more than she was just forced to do. So she's forced. So they say a woman, in general, that's not the halacha, that a woman doesn't have to. What she can do, fight, so there's no point. She's going to rape her anyways. It's like a rape, you know, so you don't have to, like, get beat. It's a sugya. I mean, there's sugyas about it. But I guess at this point, she held at this moment, she could do it for the sake of saving life. So apparently, she held that she could do it.
So that means there are
conditions
on that.
You can
make that decision.
Like, yeah, it's true. It's true. They say that by Yael also. Yeah. Wow. They say, Gadol, Avira, Lishma, that case. She did that also. She used to use the general, right? Gave him the drink and the wine and the cheese and whatever, and she seduced him. And then she smashed his head. Yehudas also did that, right? Yehudas? Story of the Hanukkah story, right?
Yeah.
Same thing, right?
That's me.
They don't tell you, they just say she gave her wine and cheese, but, they don't tell you the seduction part.
Kind of like there was a love into it in perspective, you know what I'm saying? Not that, it's not serious or anything, but just like, it's Allah's goal, you know?
Yeah. It's true.
I mean,
presumably she had that was Mordechai. I guess Mordechai was a posik. That's what he's telling her to do. Mordechai himself, right? That was his. He's a gadadar. He's a posik, and he's posking for her to do it.
But if you're still, it's talking about like a string, like a halacha like that. That doesn't really change anything in terms of a posik allowing you. I'm saying like a posik saying that you could. That you could sleep with somebody else's wife, and what does that really say?
Well, it's saying in a situation like that where the sick, if it's sick, it's saving.
Right, I think there has to be like in terms of like a claw,
for sure.
Like they even show like there's, I forgot which Kumara that's talked about this, but like there's like any mitzvah or any Aveda that you're committing, somebody's making you commit, basically because you're a Jew, like they're doing it That takes the status of it, meaning that you really have to die for any Avera in terms on that level. If it's
it's true, but that wasn't the case here. That's a question. It's machlokas whether it's Eish HaSesh, if it's with a guy. Because she's married. That's a question if she was married altogether. It's not clear. If she wasn't married, then it isn't.
But the Pesukim don't say
that. Is there any problem?
It is.
A real Eish HaSesh is a Rayas?
Eish HaSesh?
Oh, yeah, we're talking about
the normal Eish HaSesh? Yeah, for sure.
Why do we say that she's? I mean, it's not. It's really posited in the psukim that she's not married to him. No, it's dod, and then it says like she was like a father.
Labas. Well, they say labas, but she took him labas. But they say chazal adorish labayis.
Right.
I know, but I think the pshat is the Megillah was written as a letter that went out to the kingdom of Ahasuerus. You know. That's a little shot. It was letters that were sent out to all the Shavas or Ma'am, and so you can't write in there that the queen used to be married to Mordechai. You know, she's supposed to be Basula, she's supposed to be whatever, and it's not, you can't publicize that. So it's not going to say open in the Megillah that she was married to Mordechai.
That's
something which, I know, it's interesting, you have to think of it. That's why I think they didn't mention Shem Hashem at all. It was basically a king, it was a book that was a letter to the kingdom of, that's why it doesn't talk about praising God. It's kind of, it's Nistar. It's hidden in the Megillah.
That's also, I guess. But is that part of the reason why we haven't, that it wasn't discovered like in any of the Dead Sea Scrolls or anything like that? I mean, I don't know. Because it was the only thing they didn't find.
Really?
Yeah.
No, maybe.
Why did they do that, though? Why did they send it out to everyone?
I'm curious. I think they sent that out. Well, originally they sent out the letter. There's different, you have to read through the letters. But originally they sent out the letters to basically to show that tell the whole story so that the people would support the Jews and they fought the war. I mean, there was two letters, I think. But it's also Pearson. I mean, the flame shot is Pearson. They sent it out as a Pearson on Ace.
Yeah, but if they're like saying, if they're specifically not putting God in there to like not.
Oh, but it's obvious. I mean, it's like, it's written in a way that to anyone who studies the thing, it's obvious. But to anyone who doesn't, it's just a letter of the history of the Gedulas Hamor, Ahasuerus is part of touting his kingdom. And he's, it does have, if you think of it as a political work that the king is sending out, it kind of shows the. He kills his enemies, he saves his this. It's like, and that's why I say HaMelech is at the top of every column. You know that? Like every column starts on HaMelech. And they say it's like a political, it's a book for Ahasuerus' kingdom. And it kind of talks, it has like a double function. It's written in a way that it could serve as a history book of interest to all of Ahasuerus' kingdom. It's of the queen and the king, and Mordechai is the right-hand man of the, right? Mordechai took over Haman's job. when Haman was killed, Mordechai became the right-hand man of the whole kingdom. So, I mean, it's talking about the kingdom, the history of the thing, the events, how Haman was a rebel and they killed him, and, you know. So at the same time, it's a Megillah that the Jews could look at and see the names.
But if anyone else looked at it, what about, like, the real footage for it? Like, Omar Hababaliba?
Yeah, that's, you know, it's...
Yeah,
but those things are, you know...
It's, like, funny.
Yeah, but it's, like, it's not that obvious, you know? It's good enough. It's a good storybook. No one worries about it. There's storybooks that have crazier things than that. You know, like, as a book of the history, it's fine. You know? It's like, yeah, we could derive Ruach Kodesh from it, but it's not... No one would blink twice. No one would blink twice about that, you know?
Oh, we say that sounds good.
What? I think they say, yeah, because it says, what does it say? Blood and the Shasmel. Homer
and Homer Believer.
Yeah, Homer Believer.
And
the
Shasmel.
Yeah, but I mean, so what does that mean? So what's the what? How do we know that it's another Shasmel? Presumably, I'll ask you that. I don't see what's that question, but Homer and Believer, simple Shasmel is like it's obvious. What? Or they know it, but it could be they talk to Ashurash. Maybe they know the story. And they know the whole story, you mean?
No, it's the part that you can't sleep.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. There's a Gemara says, how do you know Ruach Kodesh? Right, that's you're not making this stuff up.
Yeah,
the Gemara talks about those two things. But it could be this thing. I'm just saying, is like, even if they're like, what's good enough evidence for the Gemara to know the Ruach Kodesh doesn't mean like every Stam Persian reader is going to be like, whoa, what's going on here? You know? Like, hey, these things are good enough. Yeah, it's a little bit fiction, they can think, they're making it up, it's whatever, you know, doesn't mean
anything. Letter of the set, yeah, totally. I just think of it in context, it just seems like so strange. But even if you're saying it's a storybook, you know, what are they doing?
Oh, well, it's part of the king. The king is talks about the greatness of Ahasuerus and the queen and the right-hand man of Mordechai, and in fact, they kill enemies of the king. And well, they wanted to, and they asked of him to do it, and he agreed.
Right.
That's what they had to write in that way. That would
right.
be that's part of the request. That's
right.
What she went in again to request that she'd send these things out. And they wrote it in a way. It's amazing how it meets the standards of Tanakh, and at the same time it met the standards of the Persian whatever letter. It's interesting. That's what I think. Someone told me the Ibn Ezra says that it doesn't say Shem Hashem in there because the Persians would just take it and erase it and put in the name of their god. You know. So this way you just left it like I'm even Yavin. You know. Study, you see the Chachma, you see it's God, but at the same time, it doesn't lend itself to
where would they even put that in now?
I guess you could say God made Amon. I mean, you could have talked about Hashgacha or something, you know. But I mean, you could just say simple. It's like they weren't, it was a letter, it was to their kingdom. You're not talking about Hashem, they wouldn't, the Hashgacha wasn't going for that. He's going for the. That's why I think also it says that they didn't. Why they didn't openly talk about any Shevach Hashem in there. It's like, it's not open halal. There's a din of halal, or whatever, arguably. There's also give at it, but arguably halal, I'm saying, the best. But some say the Kriyas is a halal, the Kriya itself is a din of halal. But it's not open. It couldn't be open. It couldn't open the right face to God. It's the political climate. That's other pshat. I cut the eye of the Ashvarish. We're really still serving Stam Shverish. It was a letter that was written in the way, you know, under the auspices of Shverish.
That's like a practical shot. Because
that what? Practical shot is the what?
That you couldn't write anything about God in
there. Yeah, I'm saying practically, right. Right. I mean, that's an argument why you don't say halal also, because you were still serving Stam Shverish. So it's not like a full gula.
And what's the other thing? If you don't go that path, why?
The Kriyas Megillah itself is then halal.
No, I mean why you don't mention God in Megillah.
Oh. Well, I think Ibn Ezra says because they would then change it to their gods.
Right, okay.
You go in the letters and it would become like a document. And so this is why you write it in a way that you point to true ideas of our idea of God without saying a name that they could hijack. You know, so they can't hijack it, but at the same time, you could read it and study the Chachma and understand that it's about God and Hashgacha through it. You know?
It's both practical, really.
Yeah, they're similar. They're similar pshat to me, you know? But yeah, they're both impractical. Well, the other pshat is because it's an Eis Nistar. That's a standard answer.
I never liked that answer.
Yeah, but I think the idea is like it's not, it's trying to show Ashgacha, according to that other Pshat, is the Megillah is trying to show how Ashgacha interacts with people on a day-to-day basis. It's not about miracles. It's about the life of Torah lived by Chacham and proper decisions leads to success with God and Ashgacha behind the scenes. It's not God splitting the sea. It could be there's nothing in it which is openly miraculous. You know? It's not the nature of the thing. It's subtle. And that's why I think it says it's Kabbalah Me'ava. Because that's the true acceptance of the Torah should be based on a subtle appreciation of the Chachmah of the Derech of the Torah. As opposed to just like God blowing them away with miracles. And yeah, that's like Yira. It's like, that's just says Kimu Me'ava Mashakibu Me'ira. At Sinai they accept Torah Me'ira. But now they accepted it from Ava. Because they saw, you can study it. And that's talking about God in almost sense it's like trying to blow you away with the emotional appeal. It's just trying to talk to the Chachmah in the Megillah. Move to the story itself, move to the people. Yeah? Anything else?
What does it mean when Zeboshah went to Har Sinai? Do you literally go to Har Sinai, or was it just...
I think so. Went up on top of the mountain. Yeah, I think it means, yeah, he went on top of Har Sinai. He went up in the Sinai, and there's a cloud and a mountain. He's inside the clouds. Yeah, I think literally. Yeah, the people saw it. It was like, I wanted to be clear to the people that God was giving the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu. He was removed from the people 40 days and 40 nights. And there was that what Moshe was giving was Me'Hashem. So that was part of the, there was a visual phenomenon. He was mamash in the mountain, up there, on top of the mountain, no food. And God was, you know, talked to him, he was like, had a direct, he conveyed the idea, it was a nevuah directly from God to Moshe. You know, and the whole Torah that we have is because of that event.
Did his face actually glow?
It sounds like it.
What's the deal with that?
How do you differentiate between what was really there, so what was not the same thing, really, what is really
in the Torah? I think almost everything in the Torah is taken literally. Pretty much. I mean, I think the Ram says, when it says a malach in the Navi, that's like, that means, that's in the Nubuah. That's an indication that it's like a Nubuah.
Yes,
not a thing.
Yeah. Especially
but,
with Bilam,
doesn't
it, right?
Yeah. Crazy. Right. Like, but I think Rebbe had a good point, is that you should, things which are in the Torah, I think Rebbe had a good advice in terms of these things, that you should assume things that are written in the Torah are literal, unless you can prove that they're not. Because to start saying, yeah, that's why I said the Nachash, you took it literally. I mean, but I'd say in general, there's a difference between Torah and between, like, stories in the Gemara. Like, stories in the Gemara are written as parables, and that's different than the Torah itself. I see, what it says in the Torah is literal.
Aren't you using a certain dimension to it then? Like, what? Certain, different ways you can extrapolate on it?
What, from the Torah?
Yeah.
Well, just because it's literal doesn't mean there's not ideas. I mean, there could be ideas in the literal story.
Right.
You know, like, I don't
so
know
what's
if...
What's the benefit, I mean, saying, like, what's the difference between, like, not from me saying it's literal or not literal?
That's a good question. I don't know, I guess you mean, like, my Bilam, for instance?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure, you're right. Either way, you study the ideas from it. Whether it actually happened or it's all on that of Bilam or whatever, what's the difference? Right. In terms of Limud, it could be it's not that significant of a difference. I don't know, it's a good question.
But the general approach of the book, though, is, like, if your general approach of the Torah is to say that, yeah, a lot of things are literal, doesn't that just, like, make the whole argument of it being a historical event?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. It's like it says simple pshat. I mean, that's what you have to prove that it's not. I think the Rambam says that he'll do when it says like a malach, that's not the physical description. So that's an indication that it's not a literal thing. Because what's a malach exactly? So it's like an indication that there's like a intellectual perception. Like, how do you see a malach? So he says that means it's like a book. But when it's talking about physical things, like that's what I'm saying, you have to have an argument to prove when something you don't say is not literal. But if you say that a malach is a code word for not literal, then fine. If you're saying it's a nevuah, then you're not just saying the things are not literal. It's different, you know? But that's why I think he took the nachash literally. because he says if you, as long as you start taking everything out literally, then you throw it and say Nisim are literal and say Sinai is literal, and, you know. But it's a book; it's long stories about things that actually happen.
So let's say like by Bill, the donkey talking isn't the thing that's going to make us say that it's not literal. No. It's like the moth.
Right. I think that's. I think so.
Right.
Yeah, because he's willing to say God can't make an ace of a donkey dog.
Right.
Yeah, you do crazy things. Nisim can do any, you know, I don't know, unless it's impossible. Unless it shows impossible for a donkey to talk, but I don't see why that's impossible. Yeah, I don't think it's because of that. I think it's because there's malach. But I haven't looked into that much. So just, you know, no question.
Sorry,
yeah.
What's
that?
Let's say, Haru's daughter with the arm.
Yeah.
So
you
shouldn't say that that's not
being
literally,
right?
I think
so. Is there? No. I would think not. So that's what I'm saying. Is the difference between something that's... What? No, that's what I'm saying. So let me just open in the Torah as an event that happened. Then I think we should take it literally. But when it's a medrash, which is... It just says, Tishlach Hamasa. She sent out... Either means... The simple side either means her maidservant. She sent her maidservant to get the baby. You know, or she stretched out her arm. But the medrash says that she is like her arm stretched out or like whatever, you know? So I think that means it's a medrash. It means like there was like she made like some sort of superhuman effort. It was like a hashgacha that she was able to do it or something like that. Like it was not an ordinary type of, you know? So something like that. But I think the plain shot is when something is a pasuk, open in a pasuk, then you should assume it's literal. When something is like a medrash, so then you should question it. I don't know if it's like, oh, it could be literal, but I think then there's room to question whether it's literal or not. But a pasuk is not as written like in a mikriyos and the pshuta. It's like we're written to have a plain pshat. But a midrashim are written to convey ideas, so just because it says sizzling doesn't mean it's sometimes that's the way to convey an idea, is through telling, like if an extreme story, it's a way of encoding in a concept. Yes?
Do we disqualify it when it's, I mean, there's no real way of, like, understanding if it's true, I guess, or not, so how do we understand that?
A medrash, you mean, or?
Yeah, like a...
Well, I'm not saying it's not true, it just does not literal. Because it's very true, there's a true idea there.
Right.
It's just that it's not meant, it's trying to convey to you a concept. Like, there's no, who cares, our arms stretched out, a miracle, like, there's no... The point is the concept that they're trying to convey. So now you have to think into the thing.
Right,
figure out
the
idea.
Right. So we don't have to go into that area in terms of whether
it actually did or actually
right.
didn't. Yeah, I don't think that's the point. I think the point, either way, the point is what's the concept, you know? But I think in general we hold that God set up laws of nature, and the general principle is that God's universe runs according to the laws which he set up. And Nisim are isolated things which he did at certain points in time to teach ideas to at certain times, but it's not the general cloud that there's miracles happening all over the place. You know, the general laws which God set up are the laws which run the universe. You know, so like, yeah, he did Nisim and Triumph openly, the Pasuk says, to show everybody that God's in control. So obviously that's through miracles that he's showing, he's open that he's doing miracles. But why would there have to be a miracle to have an arm start stretching out by Paro's daughter? Like, it just, so you have to think into it. But clearly there were times in history where God did miracles for the purpose of showing that he created the world and he is in full control over the world. So that's why you can say that is no reason to say that's not literal. You know, that's the whole point of the thing. It's open in the Torah, that's the point that he's doing miracles. You know? But it's not open in the Torah that there's miracles going on all over the place and just people are very drawn to miracles, so people like to take every single medrash and talk about a miracle and talk about all these things happening, and then there's no chachma of laws of nature, it's just everything is always miraculous. There's an appeal of that.
What was the purpose, though? I don't...
Josh, are doing that?
No, even of the Nisim and the Torah, I'm saying even if I guess the way we hold it is that it's based on, like, the real reason that we believe in the Torah, or hold it to be true, is based on the unequivocal, like Hashem announcing straight to God.
But that's
right,
a miracle.
So that's considered part of the...
That is a miracle.
So we could have...
Right. But I think that's what they say, that was God teaching the world about his existence. In other words, there was at one point in history where God did many events to show the world at large that he exists, and to show ideas about God's control. And then he eternalized those ideas through the Torah, through the event of Sinai. And then lasts for, now Sinai is set up as a, this unequivocal, undeniable evidence, which has all this, all the nisim that he did. So now that serves the Dorei Doros about the fact God doesn't break the laws in every single generation. He just did it at one time in history, set up Klal Yisrael, set up the Torah, which perpetuates the memory of those events, and now the Olam Kimnago Noeg.
It's
a new era, so to speak, which, and now the Torah, that's what the Pshat Rebbe says, Al Nisecha Shebechol Yom Imanu, we say in Mogen, you know, on the miracles which are with us every day. But what miracles every day? So what he wanted to say means is that the Nisei Mitzrayim are with us every day because we have so many mitzvot. So the Ramban says this, the Chinuch says this, so many mitzvot, Solomon Tizkar, Siyam Tizkar, Mitzrayim, Tefillin reminds of Mitzrayim, and Kiddush we talk about Mitzrayim, Pesach is Mitzrayim, because the Nisim are fundamental ideas in the Torah. They prove many ideas that God is in control of the world. He created the world. There's Hashkacha.
So they don't necessarily, you're saying it's not necessarily the belief aspect necessarily, but it's a way of dignifying the event almost. It's a way of,
what? The Nisim? Well, the Nisim proved to us certain approved ideas. They proved that God created the world, that God has control over the world, God wants man to live a certain way, and he rewards the people who live a certain way and punishes people who live a different way. So there are many ideas which are derived, which the Nisim proved to us. And since we know that these Nisim happen, we know about those ideas. You know, so they're very significant. It's just that you don't need to have them happen in every single generation, they happen once.
But I remember like Rav Pizda was talking about this, that like Nisim, once, like, these are very easy to be questioned afterwards. They're not really.
That's true. I mean, Sinai was the ultimate raya, because Sinai had a certain type of, had an effect. But now we know through Sinai that these events happened. You know, so we know those events happened, and the events teach us those ideas. It could be if you only had those events without Sinai, so then maybe it would have lent itself in the long run to being questioned. But given that we have Sinai, then we can study the events that we know Sinai is true, and now we can study the events in the Torah and understand the ideas that it was conveying. But I don't think it means that Nisan can't teach any ideas. You see the Nisan were trying to Yadu Mitzrayim, Kiani Hashem, trying to teach ideas to the Mitzrayim.
Right.
It just means that ultimately a person could question it. It's not, you want to have something that will last, a Dorei Doros, you need something like Sinai.
Right.
You know, because Nisan will be questioned.
Right.
You know, but it does work for it to show ideas. Yeah. Good question. Okay, we good? Where are we at here? Okay, so should we stop? Sounds good? What? Oh, yeah.
Is this scum kosher? You shoved it down my throat, but is it kosher or not?